Morning, First Baptist Olton. How are you guys doing? That is great to hear. Great to hear. So this morning, I've got a couple of tasks before me, and so I just want you to relax, get comfortable. I've got to go through a presentation about AIM for India and specifically about the water well, and I'm also going to preach, and we're going to try to get all that done in 30 minutes. So I was going to stand up here and tell you the presentation is only going to take 45 minutes, the sermon's an hour. Guys, just relax. You waited 6 years for the water well. What's an hour and a half for to hear about it? So seriously, though, I'm thrilled to be here with you guys today. First Baptist Olton, you guys don't know how much you mean to us, the organization of AIM for India. And we just want, on behalf of the organization, I'd like to thank you this morning for all that you've done, especially for your patience over the years with us in bringing this about. And I'd like to report to you this morning, just to kind of get to it and blow the story before I get to the end here. The water well's working, and people are getting water out of it. And so that's an amazing thing. Yeah, absolutely. That is something. And so I want to come out and celebrate with you guys. And I told David a long time ago, I said, I am not coming back to Olton until that water well is working. And so I'm here to report it is working, and so we're thrilled about that. And so what I want to do this morning, if I could, is I'm just going to run through quickly kind of the storyline of how we started and how we got to this point 6 years later where we finally have a functioning water well. And some of you were here 6 years ago for the beginning of this. And some of this may be familiar, and some of you may know some of these things, and some of you may not know some of these things. And I want to tell you that for Godwin, I believe he's listening today on Facebook Live, so I think he's hearing all of this, and so he's kind of here in spirit with us. For him, this was his greatest frustration, that he could not deliver on this sooner. And if he was here, I think he would say the same thing, that he wanted to get this done so much faster, so much quicker. And it just was beyond him. And so you're going to see some of that this morning as we go through this. So, Brock, we didn't work out any kind of signal, so I guess I'll just tell you the next slide, and we'll go right along here. So this is kind of just a refresher course. This is what our mission is. This is who we are. This is what we're about. So we help impoverished children. We help the low caste. We help the poorest of the poor. We want them to get out of a life of slavery. But this is not just some kind of social ministry that we want to provide for them so that we can provide them with a better life. We also want to share with them the gospel of Jesus Christ along the way. And those things go hand in hand. Those things are not exclusive to one another. We believe that the gospel would have us do both of those things. So I want to assure you that we're still all in on that. And so in this, what we've done is that the gospel teaches us that it's about the forgiveness of Jesus Christ and his work on the cross, but it's also about meeting physical needs wherever that's possible to do. And so the gospel includes both of those things. And so I just want to remind you of this. So 6 years ago, this church stepped up in a huge way to help us deliver on meeting one of those physical needs. And I included a picture up there of basically what is kind of the drinking water within a village and just kind of how dirty, kind of how filthy that water really is and the difference that it's going to make. I want to show you this. And so basically, you guys stepped up in a huge way to help us out with that. You guys were the ones who kind of put this over the top and made this financially a reality for us. And so I just want to run that through you. So I'll go on to the next slide here. So back in the summer of 2012, a man that you guys know well, Brother Jay Cowart, who's passed on since then, but in 2012, he stood up and he challenged this church to meet the need in India. And so we talked about that there was a need there, that they didn't have clean drinking water, that there was diseases related to that, there were all kinds of illnesses, and if we were going to help these people in the long run, it would be because we could meet some of these physical needs. And this is one of the things that we could do is be able to provide clean drinking water. And Jay felt compelled to stand up in this church and challenge you guys to step up and to meet that need. And so on to the next slide. At that time, at that particular point in time in 2012, we had raised $4,000. We needed to raise $17,000 to make that a reality. And Jay challenged this church to provide the remaining $13,000, which you guys did. And so that's really an amazing thing. So at that point, we knew that we could move forward with getting the well and making this a reality. here's where all of the fun stuff steps in. And it was kind of a comedy of errors in some ways. It was a matter of frustration for Godwin and I. And just to kind of run through kind of what happened after the summer of 2012, we have the funds at this particular point, but what we don't have is a facility to house everything that would go into that, the filter and to be able to protect it. And so we had to wait until we had that facility in place to be able to purchase that water well. And so we were waiting for that to be done. At the time, we only had one piece of land. We had the 4-acre piece of property. So in 2013, in spring of 2013, April and May, we began the construction of the wall that went around that property. And so you guys have seen pictures of the wall. In fact, you have a picture in your hallway of a group that went from this church standing right outside of that wall. And so that wall was constructed. But in order to construct that, we had to have a water well in place to be able to provide water for the construction. And so we drilled that well thinking that would be the water well. That would be the place where we would put our facility. That would be the place where the water well would go in place. But God had other plans for that. And so at that time, we ordered the RO filter from Hyderabad. Hyderabad is a city in central India. You'll see a map here in a second. It'll make a lot more sense to you. And so this was the place that it was being manufactured. So a year later, spring of 2014, AIM for India is gifted with a second piece of property. This is the property where the school actually is. It's a smaller piece of property, it's about an acre, and so we actually built the school in this place. In that summer, June 2nd of 2014, the state of Andhra Pradesh, where we work, was split into two separate states. This will come into play later in the story. One state was known as Telangana, the other state remained Andhra Pradesh, and we are in Andhra Pradesh. And so on December 25th of that year, that is when construction began on the school. And so we began construction on Christmas Day 2014, kind of as a Christmas gift to all of our donors that we began construction on that day. Here you see a map of India. And if you will, the right side is the nation of India. And if you'll notice on the right-hand side, there's a light green state. And so it's above the kind of pinkish purple state. That is the state of Andhra Pradesh. That's the way it looked before it split into two states. Here on the left is a map of that same area, and this is how it was split off. And I don't know if you notice, but in the area surrounded in red, that is the state of Telangana. The rest of that territory is Andhra Pradesh, where our school is located. I don't know if you can see it on this map, but if you can read that, it says East Godavari right there on the coast. That's actually the district where our school is. Hyderabad, you'll notice, is in Telangana. So our filter is being manufactured in a different state. What this means is now it's going to be difficult for us to transport the filter from Telangana to Andhra Pradesh without paying taxes for that, and that's exactly what happened. So Brock, if you can go on to the next slide there. And so we see here that in spring, once we had the second property going, once we had construction underway, we called First Baptist Olton and we said originally we had planned to put the water well on the 4-acre property. But that's not where the building's going to be. We feel like we could protect it better. We feel like it would be better served in this new location. And so we sought permission from you guys to be able to move the water well. And your response was move the water well wherever you need it. Wherever it will best serve the people, that's where we want it. That was the original intent. And so that's exactly what we did. And so in early 2016, construction is finished on the school. We now have a facility to house the water well, to be able to protect it, to be able to do what we need to do. And so on July 4th of that year, AIM for India School opened for the very first time. Our very first school year, it was a huge day for us. It was on Independence Day here in the U.S. And for them, it was kind of symbolic for us to be able to provide an education that would be a means to which they would escape slavery into freedom. And so those were big days for us. Here's where things get a little crazy. In the fall of 2016, the person who was building it, the vendor in Hyderabad, he promised delivery by November. And then in November, he informs us that he would need basically the fee to cross over the state from Telangana to Andhra Pradesh. And that fee would be $5,000 to move the equipment. $5,000 we didn't have. And so we put the word out that we needed $5,000 to be able to transport this over state lines, to be able to get it to where we needed to. And Aldersgate Church in Lubbock, Texas stepped up and they raised $5,000 in a month for us to be able to do that. So they had a huge hand in being able to make this a possibility. So here we are at the end of 2016. We were promised in November of 2016 that this would be working, and still it's not in place. The RO system is completed. So when we ordered it, basically what we did was we got in line. And this guy would hand make these things, and he would say, like, you're 10th in line, you're 15th in line. And once I get these other 10 made, I'll make yours. And so basically what he had done is in 2017 it was completed. Godwin goes to Hyderabad, he inspects it for the first time, he pays the vendor a portion of the $13,000 to show good faith. The rest would be paid when it was installed. And so that was the plan that we had in place. Now everything's in place. We've showed in good faith by paying him. He's got the money to transport it. Everything is going along. And in the summer, the vendor demands more payment, which brings us to a stalemate. So this is the way business is done in India. So this seems odd to you guys. This is the norm in India. This is what happens, and this is why we don't pay for things fully in advance. You don't pay for things until they're done, because this is the only leverage you have in this negotiation to hold it over their head. If you want to get paid, deliver to me what you said you would deliver me and do it. And so he begins to demand more payment, and then we go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then in November of that year, the vendor's wife died. And in Hindu religion, he goes into a 40-day period of mourning. And so he told us that he would install the RO filter after his 40-day period of mourning. We honored that. We said that would be fine. And during his period of mourning, he sold his company to another man. And by law, this new vendor who took over the company did not have to honor any prior deals that he had with us, and we had already paid a portion of it for it. And it's at this point that we begin to panic, because we believe now that we've lost the water well. But because we still had money, and this new vendor has this RO filter sitting over in the corner of his shop that's custom fit for our school, it can't be used anywhere else. And basically our negotiation with him was, you can't do anything else with that, you might as well bring it to us. And if you bring it to us, we've still got some money, we would pay you. And so back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so the new vendor agrees to transport the RO system across state lines from Telangana to Andhra Pradesh to a city called Rajahmundry, which is about an hour and a half away from where our school is. And it's at that point that we pay him the remaining money, because we now have access, we have access to it. And so, and because that was around the time of year that Godwin was traveling back to the U.S., we did not want them to install it when he was out of India. We wanted them to wait till he was back where he could oversee it. And so in October, they transport the RO system to the school. They begin the installation at that point. And here we find ourselves in November of 2018. The RO system is installed and working, praise God. So that's a long story to get to where we are today, right? And it doesn't even begin to tell you how many tears we shed and how many times we just had a cold sweat over this whole thing and how long this took and walking through this whole process. And so what I want to show you is just, here's some of the pictures of the guys installing the reverse osmosis system within the school. This is inside. This is on the second floor of our school building. And so it's housed basically on the second floor of the school. We have some pipes that run outside the building down underground to this gate right outside of our school. This is right at the gate of our school. Notice the sign, AIM Living Water, donated by FBC Olton. And what Jay Cowart said back in 2012 is that we must give these people drinking water so that they can hear about living water. And so in honor of that, here are pictures of, these are ladies, they're teacher's aides at our school. None of the villagers would allow us to take their picture. They didn't want their picture made, and so they're pretty shy people. And so we had to get the people we pay out there, said, look, we're paying you. Get out there, get some water out of this thing so we can get some pictures. And so that's exactly what happened. And so here they are. And let me tell you something that's unbelievable. This will blow you away. This blows me away every time I think about it. These ladies, look at them. They're beautiful souls, but they're not spring chickens. You know what I'm saying? They're more mature in age. This is the first time in their lives they've gotten water out of a faucet. You believe that? First time in their lives. They've gone to a spigot, turned it on, and water came out of it. And not only water came out of it, it's clean water. It's water you and I could go over there today, we could get a cup out of this and we could drink it. It wouldn't harm us. You and I go get a drink out of the creek that they used to drink out of, it would probably kill us, not just harm us. But anyway, that's another story. But these guys have clean water at this particular point. So Brock, we've got a video, and this is basically, I just want to show you a video of it working. You're going to think, okay, great, they're turning on water, and water is coming out of it. But exciting stuff. But yeah, it is. It is really exciting stuff. It's incredible stuff if you think about it. And so it's just a beautiful picture. And so here we are, video, and here's the ladies getting water right out of the faucet. Here it is. Two of them work. So just as you're watching this, just to give you a little testimonial about this, our tank that sits in that house where the coming out of the wall there, our tank will hold 1,000 liters of water. So on day one, when the people in the village found out this is open, they came so much, so often, that we refilled the tank 5 times. And I'm thinking as executive director, like executive directors think. I'm thinking, good grief, what is our electric bill going to be? Oh my goodness, what does that do to the filter in the RO system? How often are we going to do this? So Godwin and I talked, and Godwin decided long before this that, hey, we'll limit this thing. Basically that we'll only fill the tank 2 times a day if necessary. And after the second time, we'll just have to tell them, hey, you'll have to come back tomorrow because we can't do this day in and day out. But for the first day, just as celebration, it was like, hey, come get the water. It's clean. So listen to this. Food's scarce, right? They don't have a lot of food. And over the last week, Godwin has had to taste test so many different meals because ladies keep bringing meals to the school and they're like, taste this. It's incredible. It's unbelievable how good it tastes. It's so much better than the previous water. Our school kids came down there and they watched it work for the first time. It's the first time in their lives they've ever seen water come out of a faucet, and they cannot believe that you could get clean water out of a faucet. So this has already had an incredible impact in less than a week. And so this thing is going to be able to open doors for us into people's lives, to be able to share the gospel, to be able to do incredible things in their lives. And so I just hope that you'll rejoice with us about that. So here's the deal. After this service, if you want to know more details, if you want to hear more about this, I'm going to be in the fellowship hall. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have. But today, we're going to be in the book of Habakkuk. So I'm shifting gears here. I'm taking off Aim for India hat. I'm putting on preacher hat. And so we're going preacher route here. And so we're going to fly through the book of Habakkuk. In case you don't know, that is a real book in the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. I did not say tobacco. I said Habakkuk. And we're going to look at the entire book of Habakkuk in about 10 to 15 minutes. So we're going to fly through this thing. So Habakkuk is the 5th book from the end of the Old Testament. So if you get to Malachi, you have gone too far. That's the end of the Old Testament. Go back 4 books, and you'll find Habakkuk. It's 3 chapters. And you guys this month have been taking a look at the idea of what do you do when life comes along and you are overwhelmed by the things in life. What do you do when difficulties and trials come your way? How do you handle those things? And so we're going to look at a guy named Habakkuk who was definitely overwhelmed with what life was presenting his way. And what I love about Habakkuk is he's so human. I mean, he's so us. It's so natural. And as you read this, I think you're going to pick this up. And so here we are in the first chapter of Habakkuk. Now, before I get going, I want to tell you something. I obviously, I grew up in Littlefield, so I'm West Texas in my roots, but today I live out north of Dallas, so obviously I don't live in Olton, Texas. Obviously, I don't go here on a regular basis. Obviously, I don't know what's going on in your life. Obviously, I don't know how many of you are overwhelmed and how many of you, life is just hunky-dory and it's going fine and everything's going the way that it should. And so what I'm saying to you is I know how difficult this can be, so I don't totally understand your situation or how bad your situation is, but I hope today that you can take hope in the fact that God is in control, even when life is spinning out of control. And I want to say something else to you. I want you to see in this that maybe, just maybe, that God is using this moment in your life where you're overwhelmed to be able to point you back to Himself, which is an incredible thing that the Bible teaches over and over and over again. C.S. Lewis wrote a book called The Problem of Pain, and in that he said this. He said, pain insists, it insists upon being attended to. Meaning this, let's say you're on the roof of your house and you fall off of your house and you land in the yard and your bone is sticking through your leg. And you're screaming in pain at that point, you're not thinking about mowing the lawn. You're not thinking about the garage needs to be cleaned out. You're thinking about, my goodness, a bone is sticking through my leg. So pain insists upon being attended to, right? We would agree with Lewis in that, that pain is going to make us pay attention. And this is what he has to say. It's in this moment that God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks to us in our consciences, but he shouts in our pain. You hear that? He shouts in our pain. It's his moment to get our attention. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. Maybe that's what Habakkuk's going to show us today. I don't know if you guys have had the opportunity, but Tommy Nelson is the pastor of Denton Bible Church. He put together a study on the book of Song of Solomon. And in that study, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, you should go watch it, especially if you're married. If you're of a certain age, like you're a teenager, and you're thinking about getting married, you definitely need to watch it. But you need to go back and pay attention to this. He says something funny about Habakkuk. He has two sons. He says, I don't have daughters, but if I did have a daughter, here's what I would say to the young man who wanted to come and date my daughter. He said, I would have three questions for him. Question number one is this. At what point in your life did you bend your knee to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? Tell me about the circumstances in which that happened. He said, question number two, since Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, I want to hear about what you read in his word today. I want to hear what you read out of his word and what it meant to you. And question number three is, I'd like to hear your views on the book of Habakkuk. Now, what he's saying in that moment is kind of funny, okay? He's poking fun, but he's saying two things simultaneously. He wants to engage a young man on his knowledge of Scripture, but at the same time, he's acknowledging most people don't know much about Habakkuk. And so we're gonna take a look at that. We're going to jump into it. So just to set the context of the book, it was probably written about the year 600 BC. Unless you're a history buff, that means absolutely nothing to you. Know this, that in 13 years later, in the year 587 BC, Judah fell to the nation of Babylon. Babylon came and conquered Judah, carried it back into captivity. The Babylonians have already at this time conquered Assyria, they've already conquered Egypt, and they've already conquered Israel, which were the 10 northern tribes. There was a point in Israel's history where they split into two nations. The 10 northern tribes were known as Israel. The two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, were known as Judah. Judah is still in existence. Israel is not, because Babylon has already wiped them off the face of the earth. The king at this particular time in Judah, his name is King Jehoiakim. And he was on the throne. He was selfish. He was tyrannical. He was godless. He reinstituted some of King Manasseh's policies, King Manasseh from Israel. And basically, in Manasseh's day, they openly worshiped pagan, satanic things. They sacrificed babies, and they threw them into fires. This wasn't a good guy. And Jehoiakim is trying to pattern his kingship after Manasseh. So this is kind of the world we find ourselves in, so it makes better sense to you as we take a look at this. Habakkuk 1, look at the first four verses. This is Habakkuk. This is the first time he's going to cry out to God. So the first two chapters of Habakkuk are a conversation between Habakkuk and God going back and forth. Habakkuk will make a complaint, God will answer. Habakkuk will come back with a second complaint, God will answer the second one. Those are the first two chapters of the book. Here we are. First four verses, take a look at this. Verse 2 says this, O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear, or cry to you violence and you will not save? Have any of you ever been there in your life? Have you ever said, hey, God, I'm in trouble. Where are you? Hey, do you not know what kind of trouble I'm in? I don't see you at all. I don't see you showing up in this moment. Where are you? Verse 3 says, why do you make me see iniquity or sin? Why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed. Justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. Here's what Habakkuk is basically saying to God. From his own perspective, all that he sees is his own circumstance, right? All that he sees is, here's the world I'm living in. This is what I'm going through. God, where are you? C.S. Lewis said, pain insists upon being attended to, and Habakkuk is attending to it. From his perspective of being overwhelmed, he makes a judgment call about God's supposed unwillingness to enter into a situation and to deal with the sin that is ever before him. He accuses God of complacency, and from his perspective of pain and anguish, and he ascribes to God blame for his own personal suffering. Anybody ever done that? I have. I'm sure I'm the only one in the room that's ever blamed God for what they're going through, right? So here's Habakkuk being very, very, very natural. He believes that his faithfulness to God in the midst of all this evil gives him the right to question God's sovereignty. Listen to me. You and I, we don't stand on equal footing with the king on our own. His ways are not our ways. He is Lord, we are not. See, our being overwhelmed does not define theology. It's theology that defines our being overwhelmed. And unless we get that straight, we're going to mess things up. And so this is God's first reply to Habakkuk. And I love the mercy and the patience that God has with Habakkuk. Look at verse 5. A lot of times we take this verse, we use it out of context. We say this, look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, for I'm doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. So God's telling him, hey, look, I'm at work. I'm doing this incredible thing. And if I told you what I'm up to, you wouldn't believe it. And so over the next 7 verses, this is what he has to say to Habakkuk. Here's what I'm doing and here's what I'm about. I'm letting you in, okay? I'm bringing you into the circle so you know what I'm about. Here's what I'm doing. I'm raising up the Babylonians and they're going to come clean your plow. They're going to wipe you off the face of the earth. This is what I'm up to. Your sin is ever before me and I will judge it using the Babylonians. So when you come before me and you tell me I'm not interested in dealing with sin, when you come before me and you say I don't see your violence, when you come before me and you tell me all the things that are wrong with this nation and you say I'm not doing anything about it, wait for it. It's coming. The Babylonians, they're on their way. That's God's reply. Now, look at Habakkuk's second reply to God. And so he goes on and he's like, verse 12, watch Habakkuk do a 180 on God. So he takes the opposite end of the argument that he started off with, and he says this, are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. Like, you can't kill us. We're your people. We're Judah. O Lord, you've ordained them as a judgment, and you, O Rock, have established them for reproof. You who are pure eyes to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent? So he's becoming a moral relativist. He's like, listen, man, I know we're bad, but we're not as bad as them. I mean, they're terrible people. I mean, we're bad. I get it. We're sinful. I just listed to you all the things we're doing wrong, but we're not as bad as them. You can't use worse people as judgment over us. You can't do that. And then take a look at chapter 2, verse 1. Here's what he does. He's going to fix the situation. He's going to ensure that God's will not come to fruition. He runs out on the gate. He runs out on the wall of the city of Jerusalem. He says, I will take my stand and my watchpost and station myself on the tower, look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. So what he's saying to him, he's like, God, I'm your boy. I'm your prophet. If you take me out, who's going to speak to these sinful people? I'm going to stand on the wall, and I'm going to prevent this from happening. I love God's reply. Look at verse 2. He has 3 parts to his reply. Verse 2, verse 3, verse 4. We'll take a look at verse 2. And the Lord answered me, write the vision. I love this. Write this down, because I don't want you to miss it. He says, make it plain on tablets. Make it plain so everybody can understand what you're saying, so that he may run who reads it. I'm going to stop you, God. I'm going to stop the wheel. I'm going to stand on this gate. It's not happening. You're not doing this. It's not going to happen. And God's reply to him is, write this down. Write it as plain as you can make it, so that anyone who reads this will run for their lives. Verse 3, he's not done. Here's the second part. He says, for still the vision awaits its appointed time. In other words, I've already appointed a time that they're going to come and judge Judah. It's already happened. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. In other words, he says, yeah, stand on that wall, boy, because you're going to have the best seat in the house when they come clean your plow. You'll see it first. Wait for it. It's coming. And then in verse 4, this is where the turning point of the entire book takes place. This is important. This is where God addresses Habakkuk's sin. He says, behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him, but the righteous shall live by his faith. Here's why I want to point this out to you. What he's saying to Habakkuk is, he's saying, you want to do good? You want to see Judah saved? This is the way I'm going to save Judah. I'm going to judge them. I'm going to allow Judah to go through the worst of the worst of the worst so that they might come back to me. But here's your problem. You can only see the end of your nose. And you think the world is about you, and it's not. And your pride and your idolatry are standing in the way of you seeing what I'm up to. Let me say something to you, and this is difficult. If you're going through really difficult, hard times, it's hard to hear that. But I want to tell you something. If you're going through a really difficult season, a lot of times it's your own pride, it's your own sin that stands in the way of you seeing what God is up to in that moment. And maybe, just maybe, God is using that moment and that incredibly difficult pain to bring you back to him. And he says something imperative. He says, the righteous, they live by faith. The righteous trust in what I'm doing, even when they don't understand it, even when they don't see it. The Apostle Paul, he used this passage in Habakkuk 2 verse 4 in Romans 1 17 to describe that God reveals his righteousness in the gospel. It was almost 1600 years after Paul used that, 1500 years rather, that Martin Luther recognized and he saw that for the very first time, and it ignited a fire in his heart that pointed him towards Christ for the very first time, and he passionately pursued Jesus Christ for the rest of his life, and the Protestant Reformation was born out of that. And in no small way, listen to me, in no small way, First Baptist Church of Olton is here today because that historical event happened. Now, I want to say to you, go back in time, 2100 years, to when Habakkuk is living this out, and he has no idea how God is going to use this horrible event he's about to have to go through and what he's doing. All he can see is his own pain. And God is saying, wake up, I'm God, you're not. Trust me. And that's what I would say to you today. Wake up, trust God. He's God, you're not. And so that brings us to chapter 3. And in chapter 3, you see a different reality for Habakkuk. He's come to a different place where he understands God in a different way. And this is what he says in verse 2. He says, O Lord, I've heard the report of you and your work, O Lord. Do I fear? Meaning I stand in awe of you. I'm in awe of who you are and all that you do. And this is his prayer. In the midst of the years, revive it. In other words, however long this takes to bring Judah back to you and however you have to do it, revive them. And he says, in the midst of years, make it known. In other words, don't let this be forgotten. Make sure that people know about it. And in your wrath, remember compassion or remember mercy so that you're compassionate towards these people. I want to end with this, verses 16, 17, 18, and 19. This is the whole point of the book. In verse 16, you see the transparency. You see the authenticity of who Habakkuk is, and he is terrified. Listen to this. Listen to what he has to say. At the prospect of Babylon bearing down on him to come wipe out his nation, he says, I hear and my body or my guts tremble. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me, yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. In other words, listen, I'm terrified. I'm terrified at the prospect of the Babylonians coming. I know who they are. I know what they're about. I know how bad it will be. And because of that, I am scared to death. But listen to me. I'll wait for it. I'll wait for it. I know it's coming. And I accept that it's right and it's just and it's true from the Lord. And then he says this in verse 17. He says, though the fig trees should not blossom, if the fig trees don't blossom, how many figs are you going to get that year? None. Zero. Though the fig trees should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines. That's another bad thing right there, when fruits don't show up on the vine. The produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food. Listen to me. That means there's no food coming in. You're not growing anything that year. That's a bad year. Though the flocks be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. What verse 17 is saying, if it gets so bad that there's no possibility we're going to get to eat, and it's as bad as it could get, we're going to die, in other words, is what he's saying. If it gets that bad, the worst of the worst of the worst, look at verse 18. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. If it gets as bad as it possibly could get, I'm still going to come back to the place where I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation, the God who saved me. Look, this is what Habakkuk's saying. I don't want you to miss this. He's saying, if I lose everything and it gets as bad as it possibly could be, and I lose everyone that means anything to me in my life, I lose everything that I own, it gets as bad as it possibly can be, and I still get Jesus, I win. The Apostle Paul said in Romans 8, man, the trials, the troubles of this world, they're no comparison to the glory that awaits us in eternity. What awaits you in heaven doesn't even compare to the most horrendous trouble that you go through here on earth. And he says in verse 19, God, the Lord is my strength. He is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on high places. And what he's saying is, God, even in the midst of my trouble, you will take me to places I could never go without you, and I trust you in that. Changed man. Changed man in the season of being overwhelmed, in the season of his pain, in the season of some of the deepest, incredible things that he's had to go through, and yet he still wants to point people back to Jesus. So here's my prayer for you today. If you are in that place, and you are in a place where you are overwhelmed, you're going through pain, you're suffering, the immensity of which maybe we don't understand in this room. Here's the hope that I would offer you. God is bigger than any of that. God is better than any of that, and God may be using that to point you back to him. Do you realize that sometimes the mercy of God is when he spears you through the chest, and you fall to your knees, and agonizingly you have to pull that spear moment by moment, point by point, right out of your chest so it points you back to him. And my prayer for you is that while this is going on in your life, and I don't want that for you, nobody in here would want that for you, but maybe that's the thing you need so that you could find God in the end. And if that's what you find in the end, that's a win. And so I want you to have hope in that, and I want you to know that that's a reality. This moment, I'm going to close this in prayer. I know that Pastor David would be here if there's anything that is God's laid upon your heart that you want to speak about, that you need to speak about in this moment. And after I pray, I'm going to turn the service back over to him, and he can close it as he sees fit. Lord, thank you for this day. I thank you for First Baptist Church of Olton. I thank you for their love of you, their love of what you are doing in this world. I thank you for their immense patience that they've had with Aim for India over the years. I thank you for the fact that you rescued and saved a water well in India when it didn't seem like that would be possible. You are great. You do incredible things, and you do mighty things. And Lord, I recognize that there is the reality that in this room today, there may be someone who is hurting in a deep, deep way. And I pray, Lord, that you're using that situation, even if they don't realize it, even if they can't recognize you in it. I pray that you're using that to bring them back to you. And I pray that you pursue them and find them, that they might know Christ, that they might know the wonder of what it means to walk with him, to live with him. And I pray all this in the name of your precious Son, Jesus Christ.